Welcome to the Big Book Awakening, St. Paul's West End Saturday Morning Women's Big Book Study. Thanks for listening today. As a Big Book Study, the goal of this recording is to increase our collective knowledge of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous by sharing with each other. My name is Jenny E., and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
I'm Stephanie B., and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stephanie.
Today, we're looking at Chapter 2, There is a Solution. Page 17 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we just finished up Bill's story where he gives us a good example of what his alcoholism looked like and how he found recovery. But I believe that he starts writing Chapter 2 to give the rest of us alcoholics some hope that we don't have to have the exact same experience as Bill, but as a shared collective group, we are experiencing the same pain. And the hope that he finds for us is that we're finding a common solution. So the feeling of having shared a common peril in one element is a powerful cement that binds us. But he's talking about the thing that really holds us together is that we found the common solution. And he's going to explain what that is in a really gentle way, because sometimes people will go running if we start talking about spirituality and higher power. On page 18, there's several things happening on this page, and we'll go into them. For example, you'll notice that there's writing that are in italics, and back when this book was published, getting things italicized in a book was quite difficult, so it's important to pay attention to those statements throughout the book, because in order to do that, he'd have to change out every single key on the typewriter in order to make it look like that. So those are important statements. At the top of page 18, an illness of the sort, and we have come to believe it is an illness, so he kind of reiterates what the doctor's opinion is, that we're suffering from a disease, an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind, involves those of us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness, for there goes an annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. So for me, when I was in the height of my use, I really, really wanted to just be bipolar, because people would feel a little bit more sorry for me if I had something that they could understand and could explain my behavior. The stigma of having addiction or alcoholism was and still is not as understood as a disease such as cancer. So I would go in and out of psych hospitals, and I'd fail to mention that I had been drinking and taking drugs the whole time. But I would, you know, explain my symptoms of, like, hearing voices and paranoia and, like, mania and not being able to sleep and sleeping too much, eating too much. And one of my favorite diagnoses that I got was that I had a unhealthy preoccupation with pleasurable activities. And I thought, well, duh, thank God, get me out of here so I can have a drink, because that's really pleasurable. So down on page 18 is where the italic letters are, and it's worth reading. But the ex-problem drinker has found the solution, who is properly armed with the facts about himself, can genuinely win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such understanding is reached, a little or nothing can be accomplished. And so my journey included that once in the psych hospital, a tech there knew what was up, knew that this, you know, you just keep coming back here, and I think we both know why, and mentioned, you know, have you ever tried to just take these meds without drinking? And have you ever considered that maybe you could go to a rehabilitation center where you're not locked down and they'd actually let you smoke cigarettes, and you might like it, the food's better, and you don't have to wear a gown? So he planted that seed, and I knew that alcohol was the problem. It wasn't about taking alcohol with meds. So for me, once I was able to stop drinking, all those symptoms went away, which was amazing. On 18 also, I had mentioned a lot of things are going on this page. At the bottom, it was pointed out to me that Bill's not really talking about sponsorship here, but he is talking about finding some sort of mentor or influencer for us. And so he describes that the man who is making the approach has had the same difficulty, that he obviously knows he is talking about that his whole deportment shouts out the new prospect. He is a man with a real answer that has no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful. So, you know, we run into people around the tables that have inventoried themselves and are living a life that looks desirable to us. And we often hang on to that person and they walk us through the steps and show us how to inventory ourselves and find the truth. So I did a little research on some of the influencers of Bill, and I found that in 1955 at the AA convention in St. Louis, he introduced a man, Father Ed Dowling, and he introduced him as a spiritual advisor. And so that was somebody who influenced not only Bill, but also contributed to what we'll later review as the spiritual experience. And then also for Dr. Bob worked at the St. Thomas, after he got sober, he worked at the St. Thomas Hospital in Akron, Ohio. And he also had a person on staff, Sister Agnita, and she was involved in just helping people understand the spiritual nature of getting sober and getting better. 19. None of us make a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased as if we did. And so he's warning us that he's not going to ask us to go join a monastery or lock ourselves away, that we're not going to have to give up our family, our friends, our life. He's going to teach us to live in the world that we've already been a part of, but using the tools that he's going to tell us about. He's not going to scare us away with any religious talk on page 19. In fact, that whole last paragraph, he talks about all the different kind of people that are drawn to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's saying, we all are one, and in our language, we're going to try very hard not to piss you off in this book. And in page 20, in their solution, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. During an interview, Dr. Bob was asked if he could describe Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and what the program is in just a couple of words. What would that be? And he said, love and service. And so, you know, I'm kind of a person of few words. And so I like to just kind of dumb this down for me too. And so when it comes down to what part of this program do I need to look at if I'm not feeling right in my head? And it usually is, am I loving everyone, or am I doing my service work? And so just accept love and tolerance is our code. We have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. So we often talk about people, if they introduce themselves, they say that I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I used to be confused by that, because if they're recovered, why do they need to keep coming back here? So what the book is telling me is that we're going to recover from the hopeless condition that we were in. There's not a cure. Page 20 also kind of reiterates like what step one is telling us, that we are powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become unmanageable. They describe that in the paragraph that starts, how many times have people said to us, I can take it or leave it. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? And that goes on and on and on. And it was pointed out to me that basically Bill's telling us that we don't have a choice. If we had a choice, we would take it or leave it, or we would quit, or we would love our children enough that we wouldn't need to do that anymore. The choice is taken away, and that's mentioned throughout the book. He goes on to talk about, on 21, triggering our allergy. That's the way I read into it. It goes into no more choices. But it says, but what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. And so the allergies triggered, he's describing that. Of course, then we go into the obsession of the mind, but he's describing our bodies and how our body reacts to alcohol. I just dealt with somebody last night who had a relapse, and she believed that she was going to be able to drink for 2 days and just stop and not get caught. And she couldn't stop, and I completely relate to that. On my last relapse, I planned it that I had the weekend off, and nobody was going to be able to bother me, and I made sure I sent out all the information to people. I'm busy all weekend studying, and then other people, I'm really sick, don't come by, you don't want to get my cold. Well, you know, I drank for the weekend, and then 5 days after that weekend, I ended up in the hospital. I could not stop. Page 22. As matters grow worse, as if they could, he begins to use a combination of high-powered sedative and alcohol to quiet his nerves so he can go to work. I like that Bill does kind of lace through the story in the book about mixing alcohol with other medications. So often other 12-step programs think that we only talk about alcohol, but we talk about putting things in our body to fill some void that's not there. And he goes into this in just a couple of pages about, well, what is that void? What kind of hole are we trying to fill with the drugs, alcohol, people, sex, money, material things? And he starts to use the word spiritual, but he's kind of prepping us for that still. Perhaps there will never be a full answer to these questions on why. And I think at this point, he's telling us that it doesn't matter why we started. It mostly matters how we're going to get to the solution to stop. If we waste too much time in the why, we're not really moving forward. He's going to walk us through the steps to kind of let go of the why. Therefore, the main reason of an alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. That's a really powerful statement on 23. It's talking about, okay, so you've taken away the alcohol in my body. My allergy is no longer triggered. I'm not having the cravings, but there's still something in my mind saying that I need to put this in my body. He talks about the cravings are going to go away, and now we got to work on the mind. And it's not going to be as easy as just a pill. It's going to require a solution of a spiritual nature. We go into the italic letters once again. And so it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reason yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and the humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against our first drink. I always focus on words with, like, humiliation, because that's completely where I was at. The humiliation of once again picking up again, having to stop, having to come back and eat humble pie. And so the humiliation for me also goes with shame. And I was once told that, like, the humiliation brought me into AA, but humility will keep me here. And then I really liked the paragraph that says, the alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time, so here's how. Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often have some of us began to drink in a nonchalant way and after the third or fourth pounded the bar and said to ourselves, for God's sake, how did I ever get here again? I don't think I need to expand on that. So Stephanie's going to walk us through the next half of this chapter.
I'm Stephanie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Stephanie.
I'm kind of winging it. I made some notes. But the second part of this chapter, I think, kind of really focuses on the solution. We start here on the bottom of page 24. In the first sentence, the last three words, and this is for the alcoholic, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid. I have that underlined because this is where we have to start relying on God. And this is, and the solution is through the 12 steps and relying on God through the 12 steps. And it's not just the first step or the second step or the third step. The solution is working the program of all 12 steps. And through doing that, is where we're going to find our spiritual experience. Page 25, of course, in italics, there is a solution. And that is all 12 steps. None of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires. The process is all 12 steps. Requires for successful consummation. I found that I've had several spiritual experiences but only while I'm working these steps. In the past I have just not worked the steps and so clearly I wasn't getting anywhere and I was still drinking anyway, so. But we saw that it really worked in others, so my experience over and over again is I see it working in all of you. For the longest time, I didn't think it would work for me. And, but it takes work, right? I mean, this is where the action is. We have these spiritual experiences aren't just going to come. I mean, like, we can just show up at meetings, but it's just not going to happen that way. We have to put in the work. Let's see. Yeah, in this sentence, when therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, which is all of you who are recovered, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. 12 steps. I keep repeating myself because this is what we have to take action and working on. Let's see. And through that, in my experience, God has shown up for me. Not on my time, though. On God's time. I just got back from the Boundary Waters. I went on a 5-day trip with six other recovering alcoholic women, and I had many spiritual experiences up there. This place was like the closest place to God that I've, you know, ever been to. No cell phones, no Facebook, no, you know, nothing. And there were a lot of metaphors up there to life and recovery. It was pretty incredible. One of them was, you know, I have no control over anything. I didn't have control how the person was paddling. I didn't have control over the bugs. I didn't have control over the big storm that came through. What I do have control over is my reaction to all of it. And that's so true in life. I've been going through kind of an emotionally hard time. But God is, you know, showing up for me in ways that I think I'm going to see down the road. I may not be seeing it right now. And I don't think I would be at this place. I know I would not be at this place without living in recovery and doing my best to work these steps. I like this sentence at the bottom of page 25. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And then when I read that before I got to the end, I thought to myself, now is life now impossible or is it tolerable? Because it's pretty hard right now, but it's tolerable. And then I go down to the bottom and that word is used, right? One way to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. The way I did it before was I drank, because that was my solution. But now I have a solution to living life sober. It doesn't make life easier, but it makes life tolerable. See, on page 26, they talk a lot about willingness and honesty. It's the willingness, our willingness to seek out this solution. We don't really have to want to, but it's our willingness. I think for me, seeing that it has worked for all of you sitting here makes me willing to think that possibly it could work for me. And that's all I need, is the willingness. Let's see. The paragraph on 26, a certain American businessman, where it starts there, has consulted with, you know, psychiatrists, all these doctors, right? But really, the doctors couldn't even solve this problem. It's a spiritual disease. It's a spiritual malady. And a lot of these doctors that were sought out came to believe that that was true. Then on page 27, on the bottom, upon hearing this, our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected that after all, he was a good church member. The hope, however, was destroyed by the doctors telling him that while his religious convictions were very good, that in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. This to me is hope for the agnostic or anyone. You know, this is an all-inclusive program, and I find it so amazing that back in the day when this was written, that there was that idea, you know, because back then there were so many different dogmas in religion, and that's why I think this is so incredible, that this promotes the spiritual experience in the sense that it doesn't matter what your religion is, what you believe. It's here for everyone. Let's see. And then on page 28, second paragraph, a new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. The 12 steps, all 12 steps. And then in the paragraph following, a couple paragraphs after that, we have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. Again, they're reiterating all-inclusive. This is all-inclusive. It's for anybody. Even the most skeptic. And then a few paragraphs down, willing and honest. Again, those two words, the willingness and the honesty. Enough to try, just at least to try. Bottom of that page 28, in the following chapter, there appears an explanation of alcoholism as we understand it then, a chapter addressed to the agnostic. There's a whole chapter dedicated to the agnostic. And that's pretty incredible that there's an entire chapter, you know, for the agnostic. Not my favorite chapter, but it's becoming actually a better chapter, in my opinion, for me personally. I think that's it for me. I just kind of wung it. So, thanks for listening. Do you have anything more to add? Okay.